it's time to get down.
Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, 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 it's Monty, and you have located the best podcast on the internet, and it's known as The Rockcast.
Welcome to Dumbass Land.
So glad you could join me. I've got a lot of good stuff planned today, including some cool tunes and top tens. But let's waste no time and get things started with some emails and listener feedback.
I don't care what's in the emails.
I got a lot of comments from you guys about the last episode, including Sean McClure, who said, "Great show, Monty. That part about the airport was hilarious, and your story about the running toilet really scared me."
How terrifying.
Peter Shurtleff also loved the scary stories, and he said, "I'm glad I wore my brown pants." Yeah, I know what you mean, guys. Those stories were not for the weak of heart. And I just hope there weren't any small children in the room because, I wouldn't want to scar them for life or have them see you poop yourselves. Also enjoying the Halloween episode was Chris Archer, who said, "Oh my God, the best rock cast yet." While Dana and Austin said, "Thanks for the breakdown of Vampire Girl. I love that line, pure evil with an overbite." Of course, not to be outdone, Mr. David Whiteman says that he actually prefers the line, "She is not my type, O negative is what she likes." Well, guys, there's no need to argue, because let's face it, they're both great lines.
It's not an incredibly clever idea.
But I gotta say, when I write something like that, I always wonder, hey, is anybody gonna get that reference to Type O Negative the band when I say Type O Negative?
Nope.
So it's always nice to hear when people like David or Angel in Houston get my subtle attempts at humor.
It's not funny.
Also, a lot of you guys said you were really excited about the Galactic Cowboys CD that we're working on, including Jason Miller, who said, "Monty, really enjoyed the rock cast and so great to hear the new GC news." And Garrett McCall, who said, "Hey, Monty Colvin, will the new release be available on vinyl?" And yeah, Garrett, from what I've been told by our label, they're going to plan on putting out vinyl, as well as physical CDs and downloads, and they also want us to do some videos. And so far, it sounds like they've really got some cool things planned for us. However, Coon in Canada wrote me an email to say that he's not so sure about this whole label thing. And he doesn't understand why we didn't make it a crowdfunding project where we could have maintained artistic control. Well, Coon, it's always good to hear from you, man. And yes, you know, crowdfunding does have some certain advantages. If you get enough support from your fans and can cover all your recording costs, then yes, technically, when it's all done, you keep all the profits. Problem is, there's a lot more that goes into it than just that. And one of the main things is promoting the album. We don't want to just sell to our friends on Facebook. We want people in Europe that have never heard of us before to suddenly discover Galactic Cowboys. And that's what we're hoping this label will do for us. And as far as the creative control thing, so far there hasn't been anybody looking over our shoulder or telling us what to do. And I know a lot of people have heard stories about labels telling bands how they're supposed to sound and so forth. But with our deal, it has not been the case. So I think for us, the record deal was the way to go, and thus far, I've been really happy.
Goody for you!
And finally, it was brought to my attention that on the last episode, I mistakenly said that I liked something that Hillary Clinton said. And I didn't catch it until the episode had already been posted, but what I meant to say is that I liked something that Trump had to say. And so I'm sorry for my faux pas and for the confusion, but I'm sure most of you knew what I was trying to say. Because I think you all know that I've never liked anything that Hillary Clinton has ever said.
She's the worst human being on the face of the earth.
But anyway, thanks for all your emails and comments. It's always great to hear from you. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy some podcast excellence. Let's do some top tens now, and I apologize to anybody who has sent me a list and I haven't read it yet, but trust me, I'll try and get to it soon. I get quite a few of them, and here's a good one from James Nelson, and he has sent me his top 10 bands and singers that wear masks and makeup. And it starts out at number 10 with a band that I saw recently and talked about on the last show. It's Ghost.
Satanic!
Number 9 is a horror punk band from Indiana called Grave Robber.
Total evil!
Number 8 is the Aquabats. Number 7, the Misfits. And at number 6, Buckethead.
A kook!
You know, I was actually thinking about Buckethead the other day. And I thought, you know, I wonder when he goes on tour if he has to have like a separate road case for all of his buckets. Because I imagine once in a while they get stolen or, you know, misplaced. Or maybe he accidentally sits on one of them.
Ah!
But, you know, somebody like him, yeah, he probably has his own endorsement, like with KFC.
Sure.
All right, anyway, at number 5 on James's list is King Diamond.
Satan personified.
Number 4 is Mushroom Head. Number 3 is Gwar.
The devil music.
Number 2 is Slipknot. And at number 1 on James's list of top 10 bands and singers that wear masks and makeup, Kiss. Yeah, like I've said before, the idea of wearing makeup and disguising yourself is just pure genius. Because it basically makes you ageless. I mean, Paul Stanley could be up there when he's 80 years old. And as long as he's got that makeup on, and his fans are willing to ignore the cane or the walker, he's going to be able to play forever.
Ba-baby!
All right, I'm in a good mood today, so I'm going to go ahead and do another top 10.
No!
This one is from Scott Gibson, and it's his top 10 hard rock cover tunes. And at number 10, it's Stryper with Heaven and Hell. Number 9, Innuendo by Queensryche. And at number 8, Whip It by Love and Death. And that is apparently by Brian Head Welch from Korn doing a Devo song.
Everybody knows that.
Number 7 is Spider-Man by the Ramones. And yeah, I love that cover that they did of that song. And I never had that album, but it was this compilation CD of a bunch of bands and artists doing cartoon theme songs. Like Avril Lavigne did SpongeBob, but the Ramones cover of Spider-Man was the best.
Okay, says who?
Next on Scott's list is The Small Hours by Metallica. Number 5 is Heaven is a Place on Earth by MXPX. Number 4 is Shout by Disturbed. Number 3 is Sweet Dreams by Marilyn Manson. And Scott says, Marilyn Manson, a truly evil douchebag that I personally cannot stand. And I stand against everything he believes in, and I hate that he is even on my list. But all that said, it's a pretty good song.
Hardcore devil worship.
At number 2, it's Anthrax doing a cover of Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. And Scott says when he first heard this back in the 80s, he didn't realize it was a cover. But coming in on top at number 1 on Scott's list of hard rock cover tunes, Land of Confusion by Disturbed.
We live in, and these are the
So that's Disturbed doing a cover of the Genesis song Land of Confusion. And that is a pretty good cover, but as far as the song, well, I never did care for later Genesis. I was always a fan of their early stuff. But once they got on MTV and you started getting the puppet video and I Can't Dance and all that crap, they really lost me. And then you got the Phil Collins solo stuff and the Susu Studio and just put a gun to my head.
Kill me!
But good list, Scott. Thanks for sending that in. And I think everybody loves a good list.
I am not one of them.
Occasionally, I'll do my own top tens on this show, and of course, I read yours. But once in a while, I see a list on the internet that I just have to comment on. And recently, a website called Loudwire.com put out a list of the top 66 hard rock and metal bass players of all time. And of course, being that I am in a hard rock band and I am a bass player, I found this interesting for some reason.
Imagine that!
Now, Loudwire did not go with the top 50 or the top 100, but instead went with the top 66. And I don't know why they did that, but if you know the answer, then let me know. But actually, I'm kind of glad it's only 66, because once you get down to 99 and 100, you're talking about the bass player for Lord Tracy or Bang Tango. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure those guys were great, whoever they were. But I don't need to see them on a list.
No one wants that.
But I'm going to go through this whole Loudwire list, and I'll give some comments as to what I think on some of them. And we'll see what happens.
It's not going to be good.
And to get it started, at number 66, it's Gene Simmons of Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
I saw an interview recently with Gene Simmons, and he said his bass playing talent is probably a 7 or 8. And so even he admits he's not a virtuoso. But I actually love Gene Simmons. At times, his bass tone is great, and he is the king of stage presence. So I would have had him higher, but at least he's on the list. At number 65, oh yeah, here we go. It's Tom Angel Ripper of Sodom.
I love him!
Yeah, I don't know anything about him, but I'm sure he's awesome. I also don't know who this guy is. At number 64, it's, what was his name again? Mike Flores of Origin. And all I can tell you is that they have a picture of him on here, and he has both hands on the neck of his bass, so you know he's good. Anytime you can take that right hand and start tapping on the neck with it, you know more about bass than I do.
That's correct.
Now, number 63, I not only know who this is, but I know him personally. It's Joey Vera from Armored Saint and Fate's Warning, and he's a heck of a nice guy. Number 62 is Troy Sanders of Mastodon, and he is a badass. Number 61 is Leif Edlin from Candlemass. Number 60 is Joe Bouchard of Blue Oyster Cult. And I actually saw him do a bass solo during one of their shows back in the early 80s. And of course, you know how I feel about bass solos.
How?
No one should ever do a bass solo unless you're making fun of bass solos.
Where does this twisted logic come from?
Moving along, at 59, it's the great Jimmy Bain of Rainbow. Number 58 is, oh, I like this guy's initials, it's G.C. Green of Godflesh.
I like G.C.
Number 57 is Bob Daisley of Ozzy Osbourne's band. But he is probably better known for being screwed out of all kinds of royalties by Ozzy's wife.
Sharon!
Number 56 is Dee Dee Verney of Overkill. And I'm actually glad to see him on this list. When Galactic Cowboys toured with Overkill, he was not the nicest guy in the world, but he had a killer tone. Real bright and nasty, so yeah, he deserves it.
He's a jerk.
Number 55 is Derek Boyer of Suffocation. 54 is Eddie Jackson of Queensryche, and I just saw them recently. And 53 is Sean Malone of Cynic. And I don't know who he is, but in the picture of him, he's playing some weird-looking thing that doesn't even look like a bass. It looks more like a fish with a couple strings on it. But once again, if you're going to play something that looks that weird, you must know what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
At number 52, it's Jeff Ament of Pearl Jam. And sure, I'm down with that, even though I'm not a big Pearl Jam fan. He played a 12-string, and that bass line he did on Jeremy was a classic.
Oh, yeah, you know, whatever.
51 is Dan Briggs of Between the Buried and Me. Number 50 is Glenn Hughes, and yeah, that guy should not only be on the best bass player list, he should also be on the greatest voices of all time and coolest rock star list. But that would bring us to number 49, which is Dan Lilker of Nuclear Assault. And at number 48, it's Doug Pinnick of King's X. And as you know, I have known that guy since, I think, 1983 when I met him when he was in a cover band in Springfield, Missouri. And even back then, his bass tone was just amazing. And so congratulations, Doug.
Yeah, yeah.
Number 47 is Chris Novoselic of Nirvana, who was fortunate enough to be in a band with Kurt Cobain and Dave Grohl. And sometimes, when you're in a band that ends up selling over a billion albums, you'll find yourself on a top bass player's list, whether you're any good or not.
Oh, hey, that is uncalled for.
At 46, Eddie Van Halen might not have thought so, but apparently Loudwire thinks that Michael Anthony of Van Halen is a top bass player. Number 45 is Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue. And I hear a lot of people say that they don't even think he's any good, but you gotta admit, he looks awfully cool. Number 44 is the late Paul Gray of Slipknot. 43 is Cronus of Venom. 42 is Tom Araya of Slayer. 41 is Martin Mendez of Opeth. And 40 is Cliff Williams of AC/DC. And I heard the other day that he's retiring, and that's a shame because I'll miss him. But at the same time, should he have been on this list? Was he that great? I don't know. He was solid. He played exactly what needed to be played. And he helped one of the greatest rock bands of all time rock. So for that reason, I'll say, yeah, he should have been on this list.
Hell yeah!
At number 39, it's Marcus Grosskopf of Helloween. Number 38 is Duff McKagan of GNR. Number 37 is Shane Imbury of Napalm Death. And at number 36, it's Greg Christian of Testament. And I ended up being in a couple of Testament videos back in the late 80s. Sam Taylor was the director, and so I was just kind of hanging out on the set. And so I met Greg Christian, and all I can say about him is he was a really good guy, if you know what I mean. He liked to party and have a good time.
Right.
But that's about the extent of my knowledge about Greg Christian.
All right.
But anyway, returning to the list, number 35 is Shavo from System of a Down, and number 34 is Frank Bello of Anthrax. And we toured with them back in the 90s, so I got to know him pretty well. We had breakfast once in a while, and we'd hang out before the shows. And he was a really good guy and a great bass player. He had tons of energy on stage, and he brought it every single night, and I have a lot of respect for that.
Whoop-dee-doo!
Number 33 is Liam Wilson from Dillinger Escape Plan, and I don't know much about him, but I know they play math metal, and you gotta be really good to play that stuff. But here's an interesting one. Number 32 is Fieldy from Korn. And I met him once, and he seemed like a pretty nice dude. And regardless of what you think of his clicky bass sound, he's pretty bad to the bone, and I told him so. But that's neither here nor there, because at number 31 is Roger Glover of Deep Purple, and I met him briefly one night. But I did not meet Phil Lynott of Thin Lizzy, but I wish I could have, because he comes in at number 30. And Thin Lizzy is one of my favorite bands of all time. And God, don't you wish Phil Lynott was still alive so we could see the original lineup play again?
Oh, He died?
Number 29 is somebody named Joe Lester from Intronaut, and he plays a Zon bass like I do, so he must be awesome. At 28, it's Joey DeMaio of Manowar. And before you start laughing because I just said Manowar, remember, Manowar is true metal.
Really?
Yes, yes they are.
I didn't know that.
At 27, it's Tony Levin from King Crimson. And he's the only guy I've ever seen play with sticks on his fingers.
Very impressive.
And I have no idea how or why he does that, but that's why he's Tony Levin and I am not.
You're not special.
26 is Roger Patterson from Atheist. Okay. 25 is Eric Avery from Jane's Addiction. Okay. And at 24, Ryan Martine, I guess that's how you say it, from Mudvayne.
Okay.
And I don't know about those guys, but at 23 is my cousin, Didi Ramone.
Yeah!
You know, it's one thing to have a lot of technical ability, but it's another thing to be able to move people and come up with something that's unforgettable. And just like Lemmy was rock and roll, Didi Ramone was punk rock.
I couldn't agree more.
All right, so now that that's settled, let's move on to 22, where it's Peter Steele from Type O Negative. And you know, if Lemmy was rock and roll and Didi was punk rock, then Peter Steele was goth metal. And I've been influenced by that stuff over the years. And Peter Steele, besides having a hilarious stage name, also had a pretty cool bass tone. At 21, it's Jason Newsted from Metallica. And I personally think that's a little bit high on the list for him. But you gotta hand it to him, he came a long way. When he first joined Metallica, they didn't even want to hear his bass on the album. But he hung in there, and now he's considered one of the best bass players of all time!
Yay!
So good for him. But moving on to number 20, it's Tim Comerford, or Comerford, from Rage Against the Machine. And just the fact that I'm not sure how to pronounce his name ought to tell you how big of a fan I was of Rage Against the Machine. Because I wasn't a fan at all.
Hated it!
At 19, it's Rex Brown from Pantera. And I met him a couple of times. He was a good guy. And he at least talked to me, which is more than I can say for number 18 on the list, Chris Squire.
Yes.
Yeah, he was an amazing bass player and all, but I love telling my Chris Squire story. Because one time when Galactic Cowboys were out in L.A. doing some press, we were coming out of this hotel, and I look over and I go, hey, isn't that Chris Squire from Yes? And sure enough, it was, and we go walking over there to meet him. And he must have been waiting on a cab or something, and he looked completely out of it. But I go ahead and say, Mr. Squire, I just want you to know that you have the tone. And he looked right at me, paused for a second, and went, ugh.
Huh?
And we stood there for a couple more seconds and then realized that was it, and we took off.
That, my friends, is a story.
Continuing on with the list, number 17 is Jack Bruce from Cream. 16 is Steve DiGiorgio, or something like that. I have no idea because I've never heard of him, and I guess he's played in a bunch of death metal bands. But I'm sure he's fabulous, and that would lead us to number 15, John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin. And since I've never been a big Zeppelin fan, I'll just move on to number 14, which is Justin Chancellor of Tool. And yeah, he is great, but apparently not as great as number 13, Alex Webster of Cannibal Corpse.
They're kind of scary.
Number 12 is Robert Trujillo from Metallica. And yeah, he's a great bass player. But is it just me, or does it seem like he's never really belonged in Metallica? I thought Newstead was a good fit, but it's been years now that he's been in the band, and I just can't get used to it.
You're smoking the pot, aren't you?
Oh, well, it's probably just me. Anyway, moving on. At number 11, Dave Ellefson from Megadeth. And yes, if you played one of the most memorable riffs in metal history, you belong on this list. And here we go now with the top 10 of Loudwire's top 66 bassists of all time. And at number 10, it's Les Claypool of Primus. And you may be like me and find Primus's music almost unlistenable, but I think we can all agree the dude can play some bass. But was there ever a badder dude on the planet than number 9, Lemmy from Motorhead? I've said it before, Lemmy was a big influence on my sound, and he was just awesome. He was rock and roll. He just went out every night with that Rickenbacker and crushed people's skulls, and I'll take that any day of the week. On the other hand, if you like those virtuoso guys, you'll love number 8, John Myung from Dream Theater.
Unbelievable.
And I'm going to tell you something now that may shock you. You see, I was on the road for a couple of months with Dream Theater when Galactic was opening up for them in the 90s.
Just shocking. Shocking to me.
Well, actually, that wasn't the shocking part.
Oh!
Yeah, well, anyway, we toured with him, and I never really got to know much about him. And it was because he rarely ever talked, because he was always practicing. But after watching him every single night on that tour, I finally came to the conclusion that John Myung is a robot.
Wow!
Yeah, I know it's hard to believe, but really it's the only explanation. How else could anybody remember all those notes and arrangements and play flawlessly every night? You gotta be a robot.
Yeah, well, I guess that makes sense.
But that would bring us to number 7 on the list, which is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers. And Flea is a monster, but in my opinion, he's no Billy Sheehan, who ends up at number 6. And even though 6 is good, I think he should have been 1 or 2. I mean, he's like the Eddie Van Halen of bass.
Hi-ya!
But I am cool with number 5. It's John Entwistle of The Who. One of my favorite bass players from one of my favorite bands. What can I say?
I wouldn't say it quite like that.
Number 4, I loved this guy too, Cliff Burton from Metallica. I mean, how great was he? He could get away with wearing bell bottoms. That's how great.
Whoa.
And after he died, Metallica's music got progressively worse with each album. Am I wrong? I don't think so.
Sad but true.
Now, I know for a fact that all the prog nerds who listen to my show are going to love this next choice, but you're going to be pissed off. Why? Because at number 3, it's Geddy Lee from Rush.
Geddy Lee!
Yeah, you love him, but you thought he should have been number 1, didn't you?
Geddy Lee, best bass player ever, come on!
Yeah, well, sorry, he's not. But who is number 1? Let's find out. At number 2, it's Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath. And if you're gonna base it on how metal a guy is, well, I guess you can't argue with that. And if you sit back and think about it, who is the most metal bass player of all time? Well, according to Loudwire.com, at number 1, it's Steve Harris of Iron Maiden.
Ah!
Well, you're not going to get much of an argument out of me because I love Steve Harris. So I'm fine with that choice. But were there any glaring omissions? Let me think. Bass players in hard rock and metal. Well, you know, most of the guys on this list had recognizable sounds. And others were in bands who had their own unique style. So is there anybody out there like that that they left off the list? Oh, I know, I've got it. Tom Peterson from Cheap Trick. How the hell do you not have him on here?
There you go.
No, I wouldn't consider Cheap Trick metal, but if you're going to have Jack Bruce from Cream on here, Tom Peterson's got to be there.
Well, yeah.
But if you can think of anybody that they left off the list, let me know.
All right.
Okay, enough with the lists. Let's do something that I haven't done for a while. Let's see what's on my iPod here lately and take a little visit to Uncle Monty's Listening Corner.
Uncle Monty's Listening Corner!
You know, my iPod doesn't even work anymore, but that doesn't stop me from finding new music. And if I waited for the radio to tell me what's good, I'd never discover anything fresh. But you don't have to worry about any of that, because you've got me. And I'm about to turn you on to some cool new CDs. And let's get it going with a new album from Dayshell. It's called Nexus. For Dayshell used to be in Of Mice and Men, and as you can tell, the guy's voice is just incredible. And this is their second CD, and I loved the first one, but this new one, not quite as good, but still got some good stuff on it.
You bring me down when I'm feeling lonely. She's so rich, it's horrible, the hungry, crucified the sun, but it doesn't add up, no, it doesn't add up, no.
So that was Dayshell, but now I want everybody to gather the kids around the computer, because it's story time here on Uncle Monty's Listening Corner. Yay! Yeah, I know how much you kids love a good story. Yay! All right, shut the hell up. All right, anyway, our story begins actually quite a few years ago. I kept having people email me and tell me, hey, I just heard a Galactic Cowboy song as bumper music on the Howard Stern show. And I would always think, A, they gotta be kidding me, or B, how does that happen? Well, somebody eventually told me that there was a guy who worked on the Howard Stern show named Richard Christie, and he apparently liked Galactic Cowboys. So I looked him up on Wikipedia, and I actually found out that we've got a few things in common. For one thing, he was born in Fort Scott, Kansas, which was about 18 miles from where I went to high school in Nevada, Missouri. And Fort Scott was actually where I got my first guitar. They had this little music store there, and my folks drove me over, and the rest is history. But the second thing I found out about Richard Christie is that for a while he lived in Springfield, Missouri. And of course, that's where I went to college.
This is a fascinating story.
Yet another thing I learned was that once upon a time, he had been in the legendary metal band Death. And it turns out the guy's an incredible drummer and musician. And so the other day when I heard he was going to be on the Jamie Josta podcast, I had to listen. And he's still with the Howard Stern Show, but he's also got a band called Charred Walls of the Damned. And they signed with Brian Slagle and Metal Blade Records, just as I was back in the 90s. And so I thought, you know, I better check this stuff out. And so let me let you check some of this out, Charred Walls of the Damned. You know, when I first got this, I was expecting death metal or something like that, but it wasn't at all. If you recognize the vocals, it's because it's Ripper Owens. And the whole CD is heavy, but very melodic. And Richard Christie not only played drums on this, he also wrote the songs. And there's some really great tunes on here, and I'm hearing influences from Dio and even Queensryche, and it's a really good CD. Next up is a new CD from Kansas. It's called The Prelude Implicit, and it's the first CD by Kansas in 16 years. But before you get all excited and think that it's the original lineup, no. There's only two guys left from that classic lineup, and they are not Kerry Livgren, Steve Walsh, or Robbie Steinhardt. So can you even call this a Kansas album? Well, in some places, it kind of sounds like them. Kansas has a new singer. They've replaced Steve Walsh with a guy named Ronnie Platt. And I gotta say, he does sound a little bit like Steve Walsh, so I'll give him that. And there is some stuff on here that I think some of you prog nerds will kinda like. But overall, it's a little slow for me, a little ballad heavy, and it's just kinda hard for me to get into it knowing that Kerry and Steve aren't in the band anymore. But that's just me. I mean, it's one thing to replace a guy in your band and keep going, but once you've replaced like four or five guys in the band, that's where I draw the line. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can tell by the music, I've been rudely interrupted for what must be some very important news by news girl Lindsay. Hello, Lindsay. Can you hear me?
Hello, Monty. I am standing outside where I am presently watching Samsung cell phones explode and burst into flames.
Oh my God, I've heard about this.
Yes, it's true.
Oh.
The Samsung Galaxy 7 smartphone has been recalled because the battery overheats and catches on fire and can cause serious burns.
Oh my, well that sounds terrible.
It is indeed.
Well, Lindsay, what needs to be done about this?
Well, if you own one of these hazardous devices and you're holding it in your hand right now, I would suggest you drop it on the ground immediately and run.
Ah, yeah, that's good advice.
Yes.
Okay, well, what kind of phone are you talking on right now?
Oh, I'm on my iPhone.
Oh, okay, good. So you yourself are not in any present danger at this time.
No, I mean, my iPhone's a piece of shit, but I'm fine.
Alrighty. Well, Lindsay, let us know if anything else out there develops.
Will do, Monty.
Well, I'm never too busy for some important breaking news, but let's get back to Uncle Monty's listening corner and hear some new tunes. And next up is the last CD from Yellow Card. They've been around since 97, and they're saying, this is it, no more CDs. And I was sad to hear it because I like that melodic kind of punk pop stuff. And on every Yellow Card album, you could always expect some good songs. And I'm happy to announce that there's some really good ones on this final CD. Still feel I need to give you thanks. You took my head shopping in case. You were the one I needed cutting away, yeah. I cut you away. You're a devil in a savior's robes. Made it easier to let you go. I never should have let you get so close, yeah. You got too close to me. Too close to me. So that's Yellow Card, but next is a band that I saw open for OTEP a couple of months ago. And they were called Fire From The Gods. And you know how it is when you see an opening band and you've never heard of them?
I think so. Explain that to me.
You're thinking, well, they're probably gonna suck, but I guess I'll give them a chance. And so you end up standing there watching.
I've never done that.
Well, anyway, that's what happened with Fire From The Gods. But about halfway through their first song, I went, holy crap, these guys are awesome. And so I got the CD, and the way I would describe them is like Stuck Mojo or Seven Dust. Their lead vocalist screams and raps and sings his butt off, and the band just tears it up. Look what I found, come get down, it's that revolution sound. Call up the second emancipation, break these chains and let me out. It's not violence, I'm on a bump, but riot will still hit the ground. Put down the whip, take a step back, hear me out. I am fanatic, employ guerrilla tactics. Open up this lyrical automatic and put holes in your rhetoric. It's archaic, kind of chaotic, almost barbaric. But yet you stand and you swear by it. And I've been readily, steadily waiting for a chance to resist. The devil is a liar, top of the empire. Blood, sweat, tears, and desire. I put my heart into this. Never forget I'm a soldier. I will not be conquered. I can't run this road forever, and I can't forget the past. My soul is under pressure. The end is killing me. It's destroying me within. My need for emancipation. My soul is under pressure. Yeah, that's Fire From The Gods, and I'll tell you, I just... Ah, Okay, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we are being interrupted with some breaking news from Newsgirl Lindsay. Lindsay, are you there?
Hello, Monty. I'm standing outside of an appliance store where I am reporting the shocking news that Samsung washing machines are exploding and bursting into flames.
Oh my God, not the washing machines too.
Yes, much like the Samsung cell phones, Samsung washing machines are extremely dangerous.
Well, thank God you're standing outside of an appliance store to report this, because this is truly terrible.
Yes, the washing machines have been known to catch fire for no apparent reason, but that's just the beginning of this horrific story.
Oh, really? It gets worse?
Yes, Monty. Not only are these Samsung appliances a fire hazard, but several housewives have claimed they were sexually assaulted by their washing machines.
Oh my God, how does this happen?
I'm not sure, Monty, but I find it very disturbing.
Yes.
And I will continue to investigate until I find out.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
Oh, yeah.
All right, you sexy thing. Thanks for that important story.
This has been Lindsay Colvin reporting for Rockcast News.
And that's going to do it, my friends, for another episode of the Rockcast. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so on Facebook or at MontyColvin.net. And while you're at my website, be sure to check out my CDs, t-shirts, and paintings.
Do you understand how many times you have now told us this?
I'm going to play you one more song by Fire from the Gods. They're from Austin, Texas. The name of the CD is called Narrative, and I love this album. I'm going to get to see them again in a couple of weeks, and I'll tell you all about it on the next show. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like unless it's me. And, Lindsay, are you still there?
Huh?
Yeah, could you please do the rock on?
Oh, yeah.
All right, go right ahead.
Rock on.
Thank you.
Right.
That's it. Get over it.